Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Full Service Radio.
Welcome to Junctional Thinking on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I am your host, Pierre Vigilance, and thank you for joining us. My career path has taken me through medical and public health training to leadership positions in the nonprofit, government, and academic sectors, as well as now advisory consulting. And on that journey, I've gained an appreciation for the concept that health is about more than medicine and healthcare can reasonably be expected to provide. It takes diverse, innovative partnerships to positively impact health outcomes. The Junctional Thinking Podcast is a place where we get to explore the creative problem-solving opportunities and innovations that exist at The Junction, a place I define as the intersection of health and social impact innovations. Actually, a place I define as the intersection between health and everything. Each episode will be joined by guests from a range of sectors, with the commonality between them being that they all have some impact on health. From community engagement, user experience and creativity, to housing, transportation, journalism, education, finance and healthcare, we'll delve into the ways these innovative influencers seek to impact social and health outcomes from their own unique perspectives. And today, I'm very, very pleased to be joined by a colleague of mine. I forget how many years ago we met now.
Oh my goodness.
It's been a while. This is Kerri-Ann Piatt, soon to be Dr. Dr. Piatt,
yes.
Soon enough. And we'll get her to talk a bit about that. But she is the special advisor to the Chief of Health and Human Services and Education for Prince George's County, a brand new position and a role she is about to engage upon. Congratulations.
Thank you.
On that. And so just to jump straight into it, I mean, sort of this new role, tell us a bit about what this role is and how did you get to be in a position to be taking on this particular role?
Sure. So in my discussions during the interview process for this role, a lot of insight was rendered about how it came to be shaped. And given the issues here in D.C. with a lot of movement in and out of D.C. and the dynamics around gentrification and the processes there, and having folks move into Prince George's County and seeking services and wanting to rebuild and restructure their lives, the economic shift that was being seen within the county rendered the current administration to develop some innovative approaches to developing services and supports for families and young people in the county that have moved in from the district. And so this is a new portfolio, and they are seeing the fact that a lot of integration is needed in the space. We can't continue to do services and supports in very siloed approaches. Mm-hmm. We have to break down those silos, and we have to work across sectors, across agencies, across teams, in order to make sure that we are adequately and authentically supporting people. Mm-hmm. So this position is brand new, as you're saying, and I'm excited to see how it manifests.
Are there other equivalent sort of cross-sectoral positions that were also created, or is this the only one that you're aware of?
At the moment, this is the only one I'm aware of, but given the movement and shape of things within Prince George's County that I'm also involved in, I'm thinking that there's more to come.
Right.
There's a lot along the lines of that social innovation and impact processes that's mm-hmm. also taking place. I'm part of the Prince George's Social Innovation Fund group in the county, and they are working to develop some very strong entrepreneurial opportunities for young people that are interested in these dynamic shifts and integrative processes. So I think there's a lot more to come for the county and okay. for the state.
Okay. As we've talked before, you mentioned, I asked you to sort of describe yourself, and that you use a term that I like to use for myself as well, which is that being a dot connector, right?
Yes.
And in doing that, or in thinking about yourself as a dot connector, and being in this sort of a leadership role that you're going into now, what is it that you're most excited about bringing to this job or doing in this role as you start out, like your first 60, 90 days? Not to put any pressure on you to put your mandate out there, but you know, what are you thinking about with respect to that dot connecting?
So I'm really hoping to hear what the landscape of things looks like and feels like for the current players in this space. What does it mean to be working in the county executive's office and how they perceive things given the realities that they observe and live every day, as well as being able to connect with folks on the ground who I have had previous experience serving. So what does it look like from both sides of the coin? And making sure that, as always in my career, making sure that the voices of those who are being served are elevated and are at the table. So I'm looking forward to this being an opportunity to be a lot more intentional in this space of bringing the voices to the table and making sure that the shifts that are being accommodated or being served in these very unique and innovative ways are true. These, you know, is the perception of the shift A, B, and C, and is that the same perception that folks on the ground also have?
Right.
And making sure that, okay, with the way we see it here in the county exec's office is the way it's being voiced on the ground, and this is how people actually want to be served.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. So this is, and I'm nodding my head off here because we've talked before, and other guests, we've talked to them about the things that make what makes you a junctional thinker, what makes you somebody who has the skills, behaviors, and ideals that are framed in such a way that allow you to think and operate effectively at the junction or the intersection of a number of different inputs. And one of them, I was so happy to hear you sort of lead off with saying that, you know, you're looking to hear XYZ from inside the office and also XYZ from outside the office, and then trying to make sure that XYZ inside and outside line up. But you're not leading with your mandate, if you will, or your expectation of what should or could be happening before you have heard from others. And so this notion of listening and being an effective listener is hugely important. And it's really good to hear you just put that out there as a way of going into a job. Because I think a lot of times people may feel like, well, I'm in this particular position. People are expecting me to come in there with things to do and say. And you're saying, no, I may have some ideas, but I want to listen first.
Exactly.
And then engage later on and then find that concordance.
Yes.
So when it comes to sort of the listening part of things, do you find any elements of that to be particularly hard? Because you are a dot connector and you've got a lot of ideas. So how do you manage yourself with respect to wanting to put these ideas out there? For how long do you listen? Who do you listen to? How does that work?
Yes, I do find listening a bit challenging given the level of diversity that surrounds us. As a young Jamaican woman in the American society, there are so many things that are already assumed of me as a woman of color. And being able to listen to people's assumptions and then having to navigate and correct that is something that I have continuously processed. And I take that into my work because it's important when serving young people and families, which is the core of my work, that I acknowledge the fact that they think that I have already assumed certain things about them, being families that need support or being the underserved community, the way we tagline people.
Right.
And so the challenge for me is to navigate what they're already thinking I assume of them and break that down in order to get to the core of how they need to be served. So that's something that I find takes time because a lot of people have been labeled for years and they internalize those labels and become stuck. So here I come with the fact that I know that they're already assuming certain things about how I perceive them and how I, you know, come in with this complex of I'm going to put a band-aid on this and fix this for you because I think this needs to be fixed. And that's the approach in so many ways. In public health, we do that so often. You know how it goes. Absolutely. We bring the pizzas to the kids and the gift certificates and say, tell us your story, and then here's how we're going to fix it. And navigating those spaces, I find challenging when it comes to the listening, because I have to listen on both sides. And to make sure that I am taking the time to do that delicately. It's really difficult to break down a lot of people's stories if I'm not able to allow them the space to break down the labels they've already inherited.
Yes. Okay. So if I'm hearing you correct, then I want to make sure that I get this straight, because sure. I think that oftentimes that delicacy of listening, mm-hmm. and being mindful and respectful of the people that we are hearing from, and just to be clear, we're talking about a number of different types of stakeholders.
Oh,
this
yes.
could be
yes.
somebody who is actually receiving services from
right.
one of the health and human service or education agencies
right.
in the county. This could also be a teacher
yes.
in the county. Could yes. also be an administrator in a health system. Mm-hmm. Could be a provider in mm-hmm. a health system.
Mm-hmm.
The number of different people that we're referring to here.
Right.
And where they are in the system, how they have been in the system impacts what it is that we might hear from them.
Mm-hmm.
It also impacts how they might perceive themselves to be of service or not of service to the people that they're serving. You may think that they're serving somebody, they may feel like they're serving somebody else.
Right.
So it sounds like a really difficult job.
It is a difficult job, but it's also exciting, because in the process of delicately and authentically listening, I am challenged to break down certain perceptions that I may hold or may not even acknowledge I hold.
Right.
So it's a learning process each and every time for me, and I have to be willing to do that.
Right.
And that's what excites me, is that each time we go into a new position or a new community or some new space, being willing to navigate that as a blank slate has always been that important and critical aspect for me. And I think it comes from the space of being a youth advocate for so many years, is that each and every young person that I encounter has a very robust history and a very robust series of talents and strengths that they want to bring forth. But if I come in with these biases and these perceptions and all these other things, I never allow myself the opportunity to receive from them the wealth of experience that they have. So that's something that's important to me, and that's why I was saying it's delicate listening. Because I have to wipe myself clean each and every time that I encounter a family or a new colleague to make sure that I'm actually hearing what it is that they're saying.
What they're saying.
Yeah.
True. Okay. You are on Full Service Radio. This is the Junctional Thinking Podcast. I'm Pierre Vigilance, your host. My guest today is Kerri-Ann Peart, Special Advisor to the Chief of Health and Human Services and Education for Prince George's County. And we were talking just now about listening and being an effective listener and the challenges of being a delicately effective listener, if that's the term that we're now going to use here. But you talked about your background coming from a space of youth development and that being a set of a very fertile ground for you to have learned a lot of the skills that you have now.
Yes.
You talk a bit about sort of some of the, if there's somebody who's a youth maybe, a young person who stands out to you as having taught you so much about what, taught you a particular lesson
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
you say, you know what, I'll never forget this particular scenario.
Oh my gosh.
You may have a few, but you know,
yeah,
do you think
I
of,
do have
think
a
of
few.
Somebody in particular who you just like, yeah, that one?
Gosh, there's so many, but one young lady that sticks out to me, she recently graduated from her program, and she sticks out for me. Her name is Deja. Very powerful young woman, very dynamic, very much wanting to step outside of the box that has been so-called dictated for her as a young person from D.C., as a native young person of D.C. She shared many a thing with me during the time that we worked together in a youth development program. And from her story and listening to the things she wanted to do for herself and for her peers, I recognized there were unique approaches to to this body of work as it pertains to a youth advocate or a community health educator or just a youth specialist probably on a whole. And it was the fact that she reflected for me what it means to be persistent and what it means to be persistent in the face of naysayers or folks who will some way, shape, or form get either jealous of what it is you're attempting to do and just, you know, try to rattle you. And Deja has done an excellent job of just staying her course. And I was so excited to hear from her the other day, and she graduated from her program and is doing actual psychology, which was great. Yes. As a compliment to
exactly,
me, I guess.
Exactly.
To hear that and to hear from her in these moments as she is developing her career, how much I impacted her is amazing to me. And it's humbling to me because mm-hmm. I don't think she recognizes how much I learned from her.
Right.
Having to navigate this particular landscape here in D.C. I've been doing youth work in D.C. for, the better part of 12 years now. But the experience with her and the peers I had for that year of service really stands out for me because they challenged me a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And resilience and persistence were the keys that they gave me.
I think that that's, it's always good for me to ask guests sort of where they get their lessons from. Mm-hmm. And I think in the line of work that you're in and in the line of work that people who are in public health and human services and education in general are in, there are all these stories. And I think that it's really important to recognize that learning is a two-way street.
Yes.
There's this sort of,
yes.
We are in a position to certainly impart knowledge and factual information and perspective, but then we get so much from listening to the people that we're serving.
Yes.
But if we're not paying attention to that.
Exactly.
Or if we're not listening for that, then we miss the opportunity to.
Exactly.
Incorporate some of that into what it is that we're supposed to be
yes.
doing.
Yes.
There are fancy terms for this. Sometimes people call it design thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not, doesn't even need a title.
Right.
It's really just about effectively listening
right.
to people.
Right.
Can we talk for a second, sort of pivot to just you to define from your perspective, when you hear the term leadership,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Certainly it took leadership for somebody to decide that this was a cross-sectoral role and for anybody to take on, but not just for this position, but just in general. You hear the term leadership. What does it make you think about? Do you consider yourself or look at yourself as a leader?
I have been told that I am, so I'm starting to look at myself. Yeah,
yes.
I'm starting to look at myself as a leader. The word leadership always conjures up the concept or the notion of disciplined follower for me.
Mm.
You can't lead until you are able to follow, I think is important.
Yes, yes, yes.
Because how do you get the tool set? You know, this, how do you build up the skills to navigate various leadership opportunities? How do you understand the language of leadership? The culture of leadership in various spaces, if you are not following someone who has displayed that or is illustrating that effectively. So for me, leadership to me equates to, that following ability, that disciplined follower. And I say disciplined in the sense that you have to, if you're becoming a leader or if you already are a leader, you're constantly reflecting on areas that you need to strengthen in yourself. And it takes discipline to be able to take that step to reflect and to have those introspective moments.
Right.
And gather what you need from there and continue moving. So there, it's a dedication and discipline for me. So that's why I don't particularly subscribe to the fact that I'm a leader as such, because I think I'm still shaping my leadership skills and abilities, because I haven't explored all the spaces and environments that I want to lead in just yet. So there's a lot more for me to acquire. So I'm still in that space of following in a disciplined fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that because there's so much to learn. Right. And there's so many people that are willing to teach, right, that are already in those leadership positions that are willing to teach. So I'm excited about that. And as I'm saying this to you, I'm thinking to myself about the class I took with you, mm-hmm, at GW, and the fact that at that moment, you were a leader to me, mm, in being able to navigate these junctions. Mm. And the fact that that course was even done was important for me at the time because I knew I didn't fit into a certain mold. And taking the course was, oh, this is great. I can step out of the mold.
Yes.
And actually design my public health career in a way that fits for me,
right,
but also adequately and authentically. I keep using this word authentic because it's so important to me to be authentic and to allow people to be authentic in their spaces, mm-hmm, so that I can serve.
Right.
So leadership for me, it's all of that. It's that disciplined follower. It's the authenticity of things. And it's the ability to sometimes push back on things.
Right.
Because there's a lot of stuff that's being said to us, mm-hmm, or done to us that we need to be pushing back on.
Right.
And so a few friends of mine think that, or describe me as very much a bit of a disruptor.
Mm.
And I proudly wear that tag.
You like that?
Because it's necessary. And I think in order to figure out spaces I can lead in, I need to disrupt.
Right.
And exercise those abilities. I'm not right. I don't think everything that is said to us is truth.
Right.
You know, we need to explore this. Independent investigation is a big part of my faith. And so it's and something my mom always used to tell my brother and I. And so it's important to call on those values and belief systems as I'm developing this space of leadership for myself.
Fantastic, fantastic. Well, you know, we're going to get back to this conversation. We are once again on with Carrie Ann Peart, Special Advisor to the Chief of Health and Human Services and Education at Prince George's County. This is Pierre Vigilance. I'm your host on Junctional Thinking Podcast here on Full Service Radio, and we will be back in just a couple minutes. Welcome back to Junctional Thinking on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I am your host, Pierre Vigilance, and we are joined today by the Special Advisor to the Chief of Health, Human Services, and Education for Prince George's County, Carrie Ann Peart. And we were just talking about leadership, and I mean, you just did a great job of folding this notion of leadership and followership into a single space, which I think a lot of people don't do. I mean, we talk about leadership as being this sort of position out front of people, and you may not be out front as a leader. You might actually be to the side and watching something, or behind your team, or you may be by yourself.
Yes.
But and then the notion of following and followership and being disciplined and dedicated in that followership, because it's an opportunity to learn,
yeah,
which is another thing that we talked about, and who we learn from. We talked a bit about Deja and what she taught you,
mm-hmm,
and then taking it back to the top of the show, and we were talking about this new position, this new role, and the importance of listening and being,
yes,
an effective,
yes,
listener. I wanted to sort of ask you, in your experience with doing different things, and you mentioned before, so, you know, Jamaican woman in America, educated, mm-hmm. I would say hard charging. I mean, you're a no-nonsense person.
Thank you.
And that sets people up for some stuff.
Yes.
Let's put it that way, right?
That way, yes.
And that's not in a bad way. I need to do better with my words. Don't play me at Scrabble, but stuff is. But what I'm getting to is that you have your experiences and your ideas about certain things, and then you may want to operationalize something, put something into action, right? But the time that you want to put something into action may not be the right time.
Correct.
Patience is something that,
yes,
as much as we were talking about listening before, patience is another one of those learned skills.
Yes.
Can you talk to us a bit about how you've had to weave patience mm-hmm. into your mm-hmm. practices, plural, be mm-hmm. they professional, civic, or academic?
Yes, I sure can. So the past year and a half, almost 2 years now of my career, has been an exercise in faith and patience. Mm. I lost my mother in 2017, and she was just the pinnacle of patience. Mm. And, you know, the grief process is interesting. You go through all these different cycles and whatnot, but patience has become very important to me, because allowing myself to be in the moment as these moments or waves come through have been critical for me, because they have allowed me to navigate some uncomfortable spaces over the past year, for sure, but to learn a lot more about myself and the way that I perceive things, given the interactions I have with people. And I recognize that a lot of people need patience from me, as maybe a staff member or a colleague or a friend, whatever the case may be, is that folks need spaces of patience mm-hmm, with mm-hmm, each other mm-hmm. in order to adequately articulate need or to develop structure or to execute something. So I look at the patience factor or element or notion or concept, however we want to look at it, as a period of time in which cards are revealed. Mm. Whether they be your cards being revealed to someone or something, or something or someone else revealing their cards to you. So in my year and a half process of navigating this loss, has been this evolution, I guess, of patience for myself. And being patient in the fact that I feel as if I haven't executed some of the things I've wanted to execute in a particular time frame. You know how we have plans and God laughs?
Right.
So mm-hmm. there's been that kind of a notion where I've just had to allow myself to be quiet,
be still,
and be patient.
Yeah.
And that the timing is not on my accord.
Right.
And that serves me well, because in my career, working with families and working with young people, I have to wait for them to let me know when the service or the program needs to be rendered and how it needs to be rendered mm-hmm. to them. So patience is critical for me in that space, and it gives me the time that I need to reflect on all the things that are coming to bear in a single moment. So that's also important for me, as this leadership and listening all comes into play in this career and character development space that I'm now in.
Right. Right. No, I hear you, and condolences on your passing of your mom.
Thank you.
2017 probably feels like yesterday, but you know, no, but sorry for that. Yeah. But I think that the lessons we get from stillness.
Mm-hmm.
And some people look at it as inactivity. And I think that and therefore it sounds counterproductive. Mm-hmm. So it's like, well, how come we're not doing something?
Right.
We should got to be doing something.
Right.
And we've had a guest on the show who talked about, from a finance perspective, mm-hmm. a deal or deals mm-hmm. where they have they had thought as a team that there was a good time for something to move forward, but then something wasn't quite right. Someone of the partners wasn't quite ready, mm-hmm. and so it had to be put on ice, as they like to refer to it. Yeah. But in that time that it was on ice, other things ended up coming into mm-hmm. the scenario mm-hmm. that made the deal morph a bit
right.
and change. Yeah. And had it not been for putting it on ice, they wouldn't have known mm-hmm. that those other factors were going to come into play.
Yes.
Because we can't always know. So I'm not promoting just sitting on things for the sake of sitting
right.
on them.
Right.
But I am suggesting, and I think you are too, that it needs to be okay from a few different perspectives. From a business perspective, it mm-hmm. needs to be okay. Mm-hmm. It needs to be okay from a personal perspective.
Yes.
Because sometimes we can want things to move at a pace when we may not know all of the factors that are going to come
Correct.
Into play
Correct.
And change that scenario. Mm-hmm. And definitely needs to be patient with respect to the people that we're serving
yes.
and the notion that, well, here I am with the program. You're not ready with the program?
Mm-hmm.
Deciding to get
mm-hmm.
with the program
mm-hmm.
is a function of you needing to be ready to get with the program. And there may be other things that put you in a position to do that.
Right.
And so if we sort of segue to that, though, with sort of you being at this intersection of health and education,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, one feeds the other,
yeah.
and the other feeds
yes,
the first. I
yes.
mean, they feed each other.
Yes.
What do you see sort of as being the way forward with respect to improving health outcomes? Is a big question. So
mm-hmm.
improving health outcomes in the face of all of these social factor inequities
mm-hmm.
that exist
mm-hmm.
that impact health outcomes, but there are a couple degrees of separation between the health issue, the diagnosis,
right.
and the treatment, if you will,
right.
and that social issue, but there's definitely a connection
sure.
to the housing, to the education,
yes.
the economic development,
yes.
to
yes.
whatever it is.
Yes.
How do you see us moving forward with these sort of intersectional ways of thinking about and dealing with and improving health outcomes rather than the siloed ways we've done it in the past?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So from my perspective, it's getting the folks who are used to the siloed thinking in the same space and allowing them to, you know, say their piece from their perspective and their realities, but then showing the bigger picture of how they actually do connect.
Okay.
Right? It's person A, person D, person E all sitting together and saying, well, here are the things that I work on and this is how I see it panning out, da-da-da-da-da-da. But then being that person, as I have been practicing in the past few years, to listen to all those different perspectives and synthesizing them and then saying, well, you're all saying the same thing.
Mm.
And here's what it is that you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And drafting a synopsis for them where they're all reflected in that synopsis.
Right.
So I think that is how it comes to bear when we're talking about health outcomes and solving, quote unquote, solving these problems, because people's behaviors are perpetual. So we can't really solve something. We can greatly inform and educate on things and help people to navigate an alternative. So it's listening to those perspectives and figuring out, again, going back to our earlier comment about connecting the dots, being that dot connector for someone or a group of people, and having them recognize you're valid in your point, that person's valid in their point, that other person's valid in their point. We're all valid. Let's come to bear on this issue here
right.
with the expertise that we have in the room. And here's how we can effectively execute along this spectrum of connecting dots for
right.
those that we're serving.
Right.
I'm glad you took a moment to separate the health and education, because a lot of times I'm looked at as
mm-hmm.
a health educator.
Mm.
And this is something that I don't subscribe to. No offense to those who do. We need people who subscribe to being a health educator.
Right, right.
Right? They are very critical and necessary. I work with a lot of them. And it's important, and their perspectives are very valuable. For me, I keep it separate because my role is to help navigate the dot connecting.
Right.
So the human services side is one thing, the health is another thing, the education is another thing, the community perspective is another thing, and I work in all of those realms. And I want to stay working in all of those realms because I like the dynamics that each realm has and can bring to the spaces that we need to innovate and problem solve, quote unquote. So for me, they are separate, but they're also very much integrated because we're still dealing with people and behaviors. And my current doctoral work is in the fact that behaviors are informed by culture and heritage. In the space of psychology, we talk about this behavior, that behavior, and we think of this issue as a disease or problem, but hardly ever take this the step back to say, well, what is the person's behavior being informed by? And it's the way that they have been raised or the way in which their raising has been disrupted that now manifests something that is labeled as ill. Exactly. So that is, this program has been a joy for me to go through because it has allowed me to finally get into a space where professors and other classmates of like mind are thinking deeper about behaviors and problem solving. And it takes my public health work even deeper for me when I'm looking at social determinants, right? And serving people where they are, which is our favorite public health phrase, meeting people where they are. But I can't meet you where you are unless I take the time to value where you have been, as it has been dictated by your heritage and your culture. So looking at the deeper side of things when we're talking about resolving health outcomes or creating better health outcomes, I need to understand the people or the community from a historical notion and not just the traumas.
Right.
Because we talk about, we're doing this in the sense of, you know, nowadays we're talking about historical trauma and generational trauma. That is one side of it. That's important. But what are the value systems that have also been navigated for this individual or this family?
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the heritage components that they truly believe in?
Right.
And how can we call upon those pieces to help navigate a better health outcome for folks? So really taking that cultural and heritage lens to navigate things. And then again, it's important for me because of just where I come from and how I was raised and the consciousness around my identity. So this has been a complementary academic experience for me, which is great, but it's also given me a lens to look at my work in a more fulfilling context.
Okay, I got you.
Yeah.
We need to just so you know who you were just hearing from. This is Carrie-Anne Peart, special advisor to the Chief of Health and Human Services and Education for Prince George's County, Maryland. And you're on Full Service Radio. This is the Junctional Thinking Podcast. And that commentary about sort of how to move the needle on health outcomes comes from a slightly different perspective than I think we are used to or traditionally sort of talk about. So the conversations typically are very often are disease oriented. I was at a biotech pop-up networking event yesterday in Philadelphia, and it was a great event, but very product driven. So a product for diagnosing this particular condition, or a product for providing access to more data so that there can be aggregation of this information for clinical trials or whatever it is. Very useful stuff. But not all of it necessarily driven by a need or a desire to understand the person, because it didn't need to. Because if I'm going to use a technology to determine your likelihood of having end-stage renal disease and having a particularly bad outcome, that might just be about how do I get some genetic markers and where do those show up in different elements of your care, and what else might I need to be thinking about around personalizing your care. That's different, though, than the issue which we, I think we're going to be dealing with more and more and more. We talk about personalized care from a genetic perspective. Mm-hmm. And there's that personalized medicine piece mm-hmm. that there's going to be some inequity around if we continue to not sort of provide access yes. to this for everybody.
Yes.
But there's also this idea that community health could end up being skewed towards certain parts of the community and not other parts of the community. Yes. Based on whether or not we are trying to engage with and understand the journeys of certain people into certain places on this particular day and right. this particular situation.
Right.
So I think that this is incredibly important for anybody who's out there doing health and human service work, social impact work,
yes.
in whatever space you're doing it.
Yes.
So if we were to sort of pivot slightly into the partnerships piece,
mm-hmm.
Sort of who are you most, well, I don't know, maybe that's too much of a leading question. Maybe I'll just say sort of more generally,
mm-hmm.
who do you really like working with in order to achieve some of the types of outcomes that you're trying to achieve with respect to getting the stories and getting that understanding of the background,
mm-hmm.
etc.
Mm-hmm.
Who have you had the greatest success working with? And who, on the other side, has been most challenging to work with,
mm-hmm.
sector-wise,
right.
In doing the work?
So I will start on the assertive side, the positive side. those individuals or groups of individuals that I like working with that have led to some very impactful work are young people on one end of the spectrum and then older folks on the other end of the spectrum, the grandmoms or the mavens of the community, mm-hmm. as they've been labeled here in DC,
mm-hmm.
because those two opposite ends have such a rich perspective in, you know, grandmoms and senior guardians of young people have a long history of how they've seen things transition from phase to phase, and they articulate what it used to be in their time, and they also articulate the heritage and the culture of spaces over time, which gives me a great perspective on things. And then young people, because they keep me connected with how things are being navigated now.
Mm.
And as much as I would like to continue talking about myself as a young adult, I have transitioned out of that phase, but working with young people keeps me grounded
mm-hmm.
and connected in that young adult or even adolescent reality, figuring out how they're seeing things and how they want to challenge things,
right.
which is awesome to me. And it gives me the motivation to want to create spaces and avenues for them to challenge things and to navigate things for their best outcome. Those two ends really give me very positive perspectives. And so I really enjoy the wealth of knowledge that I get from those ends. Folks or groups or entities that are harder to work with are those who still maintain the siloed perspective or
right.
approach to work.
Yes.
Those who I am gathering, it's out of fear that those kind of perspectives or mentalities are retained. Because if I step outside of the box, who am I? Like, what do I then do? Because I don't know anything other than what's in this silo. And I've been in this silo for X amount of years, and I have leveled up in this silo and, you know, earned this particular title and earned this particular status and things of that nature. So you're now asking me to step outside of this? Oh, that's a threat to my identity as a professional, to my access that they, you know, believe in. Within the silos. And you know, I beg to differ that sometimes stepping outside of the silo is probably what you need to do in order to further grow and elevate. But I also recognize that not everybody likes growth as much as they claim to say they do.
Stepping in some stuff. We have a whole, I don't know, I'm looking over here to see if we even have time. The issue, and I'm going to specifically, and this is Pierre Vigilance's take on things. This is not an agreed upon commentary from Kerry and Pierre.
Yes.
Public health is particularly guilty of what you were just describing. In that there's a significant amount of comfort in being swaddled in very familiar blankets of knowledge and organization types, etc. The usual suspects, I like to call them. If the usual suspects make up your that favorite sweatshirt and that favorite snuggie and that favorite couch and that favorite corner, then you feel like you never want to leave.
Right.
Someone's always bringing you your favorite snack. The television's always on the right channel. This is not a very public health scenario, but you know what I'm
saying. I get it,
right?
Yes.
It's very comfortable.
Yes.
And if someone were to say to you, hey, how about you watch something different? How about you wear something different? How about you eat something different? Then there has to be a desire for you to change something, right? The same thing that we want for the people that we are talking serving is something that we don't always necessarily or have not always necessarily in public health embodied ourselves. So when we start talking about partnering, here you are in a position where you are at the intersection of health and education. Sure, there's health education and there's education in health,
right?
But there are two separate worlds.
Yes.
And being willing to be at that intersection requires some comfort with discomfort.
Right.
And when we live in a siloed existence, if you will, we don't get comfortable with discomfort because we only ever talk to ourselves about our stuff in language that we understand. We're never in a room with anybody speaking a foreign language. And when we are in a room with someone speaking that foreign language, we don't really say to them, hey, slow down, can you translate that for me? Let me translate what I'm saying for you so that we can have that understanding.
Yes.
We don't try to get to the junction. You stay on your road, I stay on mine. We happen to be in the same state at the same time, but you're on 95 and I'm on 395. We are not on the same road. And I it's just my 2 seconds on the soapbox
I'm here shaking my leg because it's very troubling. And the other experience that I've also over the years recognized are folks who are claiming to step out of their silos and to enter other arenas in order to share knowledge and create best practices and those things of that nature, but then impose their silo mentality in these new spaces and take their siloed language and try and sporadically, spit it and spray it out in this other space and think that that means good. And that's not it. So those are some of the things that I've also recognized that this has been challenging in terms of developing partnerships is folks impose things.
Yes.
And that's not always the best way.
Well, we have so much more that we could talk about, but our time has come to an end. And Kerry-Ann, I really appreciate you being on the show today. This is Kerry-Ann Peart, Special Advisor to the Chief of Health and Human Services and Education for Prince George's County, a new role and a new person in this new role. So we wish you all the best in that role. Thank you for being on here with us today.
This has
been another episode of Junctional Thinking on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C., and we will see you next time.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO on Instagram and Facebook at Full Service Radio. Thanks for listening.